From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Rochester in 1994 when two friends decided to take on a new project. Michelle Cardula co-founded Lake Effect Magazine with the goal of highlighting the creative people living and working in the community. Now, the biannual arts, culture, and literary publication is celebrating 25 years of sharing powerful stories and creative endeavors, including in its 55th volume, which you can now find on newsstands in Rochester and online. This anniversary edition is dedicated to women and features 12 local women who have helped shape the community. They share their superpowers, the events that influence them, their advice for young women, and their sheroes, female heroes who have helped them become the women they are today. In 2013, when Cardula was named a woman to watch by the Democrat and Chronicle, she told the newspaper that she had no idea what she was doing publishing the magazine, but she stuck with it, and her 25 years of success shine in this most recent issue. This hour, we sit down with her to discuss that story, Lake Effect's history, the state of the literary and creative arts scene in Rochester, and we're going to meet some of the women featured in the 55th volume. We were drawn to their stories as well, and we wanted our listeners to hear them in the words of the women themselves. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. Happy 25th, Michelle Cardula, editor and publisher of Lake Effect Magazine. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Evan. Thank you for having me on the show. I love your show.
It's great to have you back here. Also, hello to Crystal Ellis, who's director of communications and special events at Ronald McDonald House Charities of Rochester. Welcome back.
Hey.
Great to have you back here. Also with us is Maria Fisher, who is field rep for the Public Employees Federation now. Got to get used to the new title.
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me on the show.
Nice to see you. Also with us is Jackie Vasquez, who is a firefighter. Jackie, welcome. Thanks for being
here. Thank you for having me.
And hello to Rosalie Jones, Artistic Director for Daystar Contemporary Dance Drama of Indian America. Rosalie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to ask Michelle to grab the microphone. And before we kind of dig into these compelling stories that I think your magazine lays out beautifully, tell me just a little bit about what 25 years means to you in an industry where it is hard to get people to pay for a newspaper, let alone magazines, and it's competitive out there. Tell me what this means to you now.
Well, we've stayed small. We began small and stayed small, and we're very local. We sell our magazines at only small local businesses. So it really hasn't changed that much. I do see magazines coming and going, but it really doesn't affect me. I just keep on plugging ahead and focusing on things that are meaningful to me.
You could have chosen a lot of different directions to go in celebrating 25. But why did you choose, particularly for this issue, going the direction you did?
Well, I think it's pretty plain to see, especially with yesterday, that women are on the forefront and time is up, as they say, and we got to keep plugging ahead. No looking back, just keep plugging ahead and encouraging one another and focusing on one another and just taking care of each other and encouraging women to take their stand.
You're wearing an Elect Women shirt today.
I am, yes.
You're referencing, of course, the U.S. Women's National Team winning the World Cup yesterday.
Yes.
Was it amazing to you to see in the stadium chance of equal pay?
Oh, it couldn't make me happier.
During a football match. Is that crazy?
It's wonderful.
I mean, it's not crazy. I mean, is that remarkable to you?
It gives me goosebumps. It just makes me so happy to think, okay, now the young women, we've encouraged them. They keep following in the footsteps of people like Gloria Steinem and Eve Ensler. And I hope that when I'm an old lady, I can see the young woman, a president, leading the Senate. We have to. The time is up. We have to take control because I think women, we have a very nurturing, powerful presence, and we have to take over.
So we're going to talk about the magazine, and it's always precarious for a radio program to talk about something visual, but you know what? It's really the stories of these women, and I think it's laid out beautifully. Why don't you tell us about how you made the decisions on who you wanted to feature in this particular issue?
Well, I sat down with a couple of colleagues in the arts, and we had a list of about 30, and then we had to get real and try to get some people in different walks of life. You know, firefighter was great. You know, we were looking to get a chef, we didn't get one, but in theater, in social work, different walks of life. And as everybody knows, that everyone has a great story. So it was really fun and easy and empowering and encouraging to work with all of these women.
Gorgeous photographs and simple structure to how this magazine is laid out. So for example, every woman was asked essentially, tell us about your superpower, an event that influenced, informed, or inspired you, advice to young women and their sheroes. You know, that's probably fun for you to figure out, what do I want to know from these women? What do I want them to tell me about?
It was. I just sat in my office one day and said, really, don't think about anything else but what you really want to hear. And there's a lot of magazines that have that. You know, at the end, they ask the same question. And it's fun. It's interesting to see. And it's fun to see the differences, the women. But they were all very similar in the sense they had a lot of empathy and compassion and encouragement for younger women and people. So it was a pleasure to do.
This entire issue was created solely by women. Every word?
Every word.
Every photo?
Every photo.
Every idea?
Every idea.
All of it.
It was a piece of cake. So many women out there. Unfortunately, in the arts, there's a statistic that just breaks my heart that in one woman shows in the museums and galleries, 2% are women. Mm. And it hasn't changed. Same in filmmaking. It just hasn't changed. So that's why, and I haven't, just not this issue, but most of my issues, I would say all of them, 80% are created by women.
Well, we're talking to Michelle Cardullo, who's, you know, it's the magazine of Lake Effect. We call it Your Magazine. It's the community's magazine. Available where, if people want to get it? Tell them again.
Abundance, Lori's Natural Foods, Panache, and Statement Boutique on Park Ave.
And you're online where?
It's a new venture for us. It's Issue, ISSUU, and Lake Effect Magazine.
Lake Effect Magazine on Issue. So,
yeah.
Let's talk to some of the women who are here with us. We couldn't get all 12. And I will say this. You didn't just get in the door today because you chose one of our colleagues and good friends, though it meant a lot to us at WXXI that you chose Susan Rogers here from WXXI.
Well, she's a shiro.
She's a hero. She's a shiro. She keeps all of us really in line, and she keeps everything in this building kind of running smoothly, and we're very proud to see her face there. But let's talk to everyone we have in studio here featured in the current edition of Lake Effect. And I've got Jacqueline Vasquez. She's really Jackie, but Jacqueline Vasquez. I've got your photo and your page pulled up first here. So what I want to start is this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do in this community?
Well, currently I work for the Rochester Fire Department. I'm a firefighter. I've been there a little over 5.5 years. My previous history, I was in the U.S. military, the U.S. Navy. I did a deployment to Afghanistan in 2015. I was there for about 11 months. And before that, I struggled, I guess like anybody else struggles. I was a teen mom. I ended up dropping out and getting my GED, but then went to college and got my bachelor's and just tried to make a way.
I'm reading from what you said here in the magazine. You said you were deployed with the U.S. Navy to Afghanistan in 2015, and the time spent in that country, you said, it greatly humbled you.
Yes.
Why?
One thing was that it was a lot more active, and when I mean active, as far as like the violence and everything that is going on with the war, you don't really see that in the news as much anymore. So when I went over there, I realized this is still really going on. So that was surprising, but also because in Afghanistan, women don't have the same rights as we do here. And I also was assigned to a construction battalion, so a lot of the people I worked with were guys. So I was just humbled to work side by side, you know, on the construction site with them, knowing that I was in a country where women didn't have that opportunity.
You frankly have worked quite a lot in different vocations where the people next to you are men.
Yes.
Firefighting.
Yes.
What's the percentage? What would you guess?
Oh, I would say about 10%.
10% women?
Yes.
Something like that. And what do you make of what it's like for you to work in fields that are predominantly male, and why certain fields are kind of weighted the way they are?
I think of, as far as the way they're weighted, now I'm doing recruitment and trying to hire more people now. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women kind of count themselves out initially without thinking because it hasn't been open to them. So just, you know, getting the message out there, you can do it. Don't count yourself out. Don't let anybody else count you out. Just believe in yourself. And just spreading that message has been like the biggest thing.
Do you think most of the differences in any field where there is a disparity among men and women working, do you think most of the difference is nature or nurture?
I would say nurture. We're just not used to seeing that. I mean, before I even applied at the job, I didn't know anything about firefighting. I didn't know that there were other women in firefighting. I was just like, hey, I'm going to take this test and try it out. So I think we're just not aware of the opportunities.
Yeah, some of the sort of the public debate about this, and we've seen it in a lot of different venues in recent years. We had this Google engineer, James Damore, who wrote a memo essentially saying that, well, it's tech, naturally, for different reasons, more men would do it than women. But you also hear some people say, well, look at kids. Let them play with toys. The boys are going to want the fire trucks. The girls are going to want the dolls. Do you believe that's true, or do you believe we are more likely to assume that the boy is going to want the fire truck and we give the boy the fire truck?
I think we're more likely to assume. I mean, we see it in the cartoons. We see it in the colors we buy when we buy baby clothes. So I think a lot of it is, again, the way we're raised in the cultural, the society, I guess.
You talked about being a mother.
Yes.
How many children?
One.
And can I ask how old?
He's 12.
12 now. Do you find yourself on guard about gender stereotyping and the way we, you know, can a boy wear pink and, you know, can a boy play with this and can a girl play with that? Do you find yourself on guard against that?
No, but I think that things are changing in the schools. For example, like my son will tell me, not that I, you know, give him a specific color, but he's like, it doesn't matter, pink is for everybody. And he says that. So I think that the schools are changing and they are relaying that message.
Well, you gave some advice to young women in the magazine. I'll just ask you to kind of tell us a little bit about your thoughts about what you would tell young women.
The first is to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So I think everything that I've done in life has been uncomfortable, and those are the things that I found great value in. So, and then also to be authentic, especially working with all men, I still focus on my intuition and compassion, and I'm not going to let, you know, my circumstances or my environment change who I am.
So. What's it like seeing yourself on newsstands in a magazine?
I don't know. I don't really think about it.
Is that wild to you to look to see this amazing portrait of yourself?
I don't know. I am like the most, I don't want to say humble person. I am a wallflower. I do not like being
out there.
Does it
even make you a little uncomfortable?
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
I think it's great.
Thank you.
I hear you. You can hear the humility. But I think it looks great. And next page, we flip over, and here's Maria Fisher, who, again, the new title is Field Rep for the Public Employees Federation. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing right now.
First, I just wanted to mention that Jackie is a union member. Yes. She's part of the Firefighters Union.
I knew you were going to jump right on that.
So I just wanted to mention that.
Tell us about some of the work you're doing now.
So I just started a month ago with the Public Employees Federation. They represent about 53,000 members in New York State. So it's state employees like nurses at the Psych Center, nurses at industry, teachers at the Batavia School for the Blind, the workers that work at the Veterans Home in Batavia. So I get to represent those people, and I'm very lucky, who really are doing the important work to help our most vulnerable populations in our communities.
In the magazine, as we've mentioned, there's a series of questions, and you were asked about an event that influenced and inspired you. And you're telling a story here that for the people who have met you in the past, or for the talk show hosts who have known you in the past, or in a lot of different ways, they might not fully understand what you and your family have gone through. Tell us about this.
So my family is Ukrainian. When I traveled around Europe, they're like, oh, your family's Ukrainian, so you know suffering. So if you know the Ukrainian history, it is a history of suffering. My family survived a genocide in Ukraine under Stalin, and then they were captured and placed in a Nazi slave labor camp in Austria. And so my uncle will talk about being 5 years old, being in the slave labor camp, and thinking he didn't care if he lived or died. It was that bad. So they did watch people tortured. They watched people murdered. And it was actually American soldiers that freed their camp. And the weight of that has always stayed with me. After being rescued from that camp, they went to a displaced persons camp in Germany and waited for some country to take them in. Ukrainians who were going back to Ukraine were being slaughtered by the Russians. And so they couldn't go back to Ukraine. They were scared and they were waiting. And it was America that took them in. And my grandparents My aunts and uncles, they spoke no English. They had no money. They had no education. And America took them in. And they made a life for themselves. My uncle is a Vietnam vet. My other uncle served in the Korean War. They went to school on the GI Bill. And they taught me that the only reason that I'm alive is because of the generosity and compassion of the American people. And that to understand that I had a responsibility to give back because of the people who sacrificed for me. There are American soldiers who crossed oceans and died to sacrifice for families like mine. And so I had to find a way to give back.
Hmm. Your uncles went on to serve and went to school on the GI Bill.
They did. They went to RIT on the GI Bill. Bought houses on the GI Bill. They were, when they served this nation, I want to make a point, they were refugees, they were immigrants, they were not citizens of this country when they served.
You said you want to make that point, particularly right now.
Huh? Yes, I sure do.
How often do you find yourself thinking about that, juxtaposing your own family history with what you're seeing right now?
Every day. I say a prayer about it every morning and every night, and I think about it every day, and I think it's really important that I share my story and that people hear that. That my family didn't do anything special. They weren't extraordinary. They were just taken in, and then they gave back just like all the other refugees and immigrants in this country.
Can I ask you a little bit about your thoughts on the recent holiday, the recent national holiday? Because, you know, we just celebrated Independence Day. And in your story, I hear the potential of this country. I hear the values being carried out, the caring for people from all backgrounds, no matter status, no matter wealth, no matter where they have grown up. And then I also hear disappointment in your voice about what you currently see and how you juxtapose the ideals of a country that was founded with words that the country has in many ways not yet lived up to. How do you kind of view that dichotomy?
Well, you know, I come from a family of patriots. They wouldn't have served this country if they weren't. And I'm proud of this country, but there's an opportunity to grow. And I get frustrated. I watched on Independence Day as people freaked out about a flag on a sneaker. And I don't even love the idea of people walking on a flag. And that was the concern. And yet, you know, 25% of homeless people are veterans. Veterans are suffering from all kinds of problems. And we're spending time talking about issues that really don't impact us in the day-to-day. I mean, the best thing we can do to honor veterans is to honor our values as a country and to understand that all of these immigrants have served and shed their blood. And when we talk about removing immigrants from the military, you're talking about my family, and it's personal for me. Mm-hmm.
Your advice to young women, tell us about that.
It's not in there. First, I would say join a union or organize a union. Women in unions make more. There's nothing more equalizing than a union contract. Union women make 40% more. African American women, something like 42% more. Hispanic women, even more than that.
So there's your advice for you. join a union.
That's not actually what I wrote in the magazine.
I know,
but it's what I'm thinking right now.
Here's what you wrote in the magazine. Remember that you have a voice and something important to say. Make sure you use your voice to make a difference in the lives of people, especially those who are voiceless and struggling.
Absolutely. You know, and I, in spite of what I grew up with and what my family grew up with, I still have a lot of privilege. I'm a white woman. I make good money, and I have to. I feel that my Christian faith, I feel that my family, I feel like that requires me to speak out against injustice and speak for those people who are voiceless in our community.
Did you see the chants in the crowd at the women's national team's World Cup final?
Yes, and I would have been like, join a union, join a union.
I'm laughing just because there's nobody who is more quick to find a way to get that message than Maria Fisher. Thanks for telling your story.
Thank you.
You're going to find her story on pages 30 and 31 as part of the current edition of Lake Effect Magazine. They're celebrating 25 years in business. And the publisher, the editor, Michelle Cardula, is here. And we're talking to some of the dozen women featured with these beautiful portraits and their personal stories and what inspired and moved them. And so we're just going to continue flipping pages because there are so many stories to share. Sure, you look like you wanted to grab the mic, Michelle Cardullo.
Oh, no, I was just looking.
You're probably enjoying this, a chance to hear these stories. And Crystal Ellis is next up for us. So Crystal is the Director of Communications and Special Events, the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Rochester. And Crystal, I'll ask you a little, just kind of do what I've done with the other guests. Tell me a little bit about your background and the work that you're doing now.
Absolutely. So work at the wonderful Ronald McDonald House Charities of Rochester. It is the most amazing place to work, and I am so honored and blessed to work there simply because 6 years ago, before even thinking about Ronald McDonald House, I was actually a family of Ronald McDonald House Charities because I have a special needs daughter. So now, 6 years, now I'm working there, and I could say it leaves you speechless most days. And we work so hard to help children and families with support services through housing. But we're more than just a house. Some people think that we're just a house where people go to rest their heads while their child is in some form of crisis. No, we have so many other programs. We have we have a cart in the hospital, a comfort cart, where we give out healthy and nutritious snacks to children. We have a mental health and wellness lounge, which is a big deal. We are one of the first in the nation out of the chapters to do a mental health and wellness lounge. So we are growing, we are expanding, we are talking to families and parents to see what do we need for our children. How can we stretch our tentacles to really provide a holistic approach to care? And we're 100% fundraising as well. So on January 1, the clock hits and we're back to zero and we're fundraising. So we are so thankful for everyone in the community who has donated and continues to donate.
You touched on it briefly, but let's talk a little bit more about the event that influenced and informed and inspired you that you told the magazine about, the birth of your daughter. Tell us about that.
The birth of my baby powerhouse, Brooke Ellis. Well, I'm an ovarian cancer survivor. Mm. 24, I was told I could never have children. And then I went on about my life, got married and frolicked into the sunshine. And then we found out that we were having a baby. Unfortunately, at our first ultrasound, we found out that she was highly deformed. We had a lot of medical issues, so we didn't really tell much people that we were having a baby because we were told she would either die before we give birth or she'll die the day of. Mm-hmm. So she made an early appearance. She was in the hospital for 6 months before we could take her home. She's had so many surgeries, can't even count. Actually, 18 surgeries, 19 on August 21st, and 4 resuscitations so far. But let me tell you something. It is nothing to cry about and everything to celebrate because she has made me strong, my family strong. And, you know, a lot of times families with special needs kids, they don't make it. And then sometimes we're just underneath a blanket and it's quiet. No one really talks about us often. But I'm here to say that we are thriving and we are surviving and we're grateful for this. And she still has some issues. We have nursing services for her. So go and fight for nursing services. Really important. But you know what? It's a good thing. It's a good thing. I wake up every day and I'm like, yes, another day to do good things.
How old is she now?
She's 6 years old.
6 years old.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, you know, giving up, waving the white flag is not in her DNA.
It's not.
It's interesting. Even at a young age, you can see persistence and determination.
Absolutely.
Even in a baby.
Yeah. And she's totally funny. I mean, she was born with the middle section of her brain missing. So she has a few delays. But recently this week, she loves fruit snacks. So I had some scissors in my hand and she's like, Mommy, can you help me? Because she's trying to bite it open. And I had the scissors in my hand and I took it from her. And I started to try to bite it open, and I was totally struggling. She goes, Mom, you know you can use the scissors, right? And every day she reminds me of, you know, to just keep pushing and never to count someone out. And we have that tendency of doing that, even counting ourselves out. And then we cry, and I look at her, and I'm like, why am I counting myself out? I could do so much more because she doesn't know that she has a disability. She just knows that she has a bunch of abilities. So she inspires me and the people around her all the time.
Oh, boy, I think I just want to ask you, tell me a little bit about where this mindset comes from, because I would never begrudge anyone in your family situation, any parents, for having a lot of rainy days and feeling a lot of gloom and sadness or a why me, which, you know, is probably natural for a lot of people. And you have this powerhouse, positive ray of sunshine, despite anything that has come in your path. How and why?
Oh, gosh. It's called the transformation of the mind. You have the choice to be sad, to be defeated, or you say, what am I going to let into my mind? Because whatever goes into my ears, goes into my mouth, goes into my heart, comes out of my mouth, and whatever I speak becomes real. So I have the revelation that what I say is what I will have. So if I have joy, it's going to be joy. If I say I'm going to be angry, I'm going to be angry. And you watch it manifest. And it's something that all the women in my life has taught me. And they said one thing about it, no time for tears. You kick the door down and you stand firm when you're in it. Don't be moved. Be like a palm tree, not like an oak. Bend when the wind comes around. It could be 120 mile per hour wind. You stand there and you stand firm in it. And you bring others along with you and you just love. And when you're bending, be shadow for others who are tired from the sun.
You're awesome. I don't know if I was supposed to.
Yay.
let me add a little testimony to this and just say, do you remember the last conversation we had?
I do remember.
Do you remember it?
I do remember.
I can't say too much about all of the circumstances, but I will say this. Everybody has had moments or conversations in your life that you remember, or a bit of advice, or the way someone told you, sent a message to you that has helped you and stayed with you. The last time we talked has stayed with me. That's among the three or five things anyone has ever said to me that has stayed permanently with me. And that has helped me so much. And I think of you quite often. So this is not, she's on a radio show, so she's going to say upbeat, strong things. That's who you are. And that, I wish I could tell the listeners even more about that. But I will just say, you remember that.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
I have always remembered. I want you to know that. She is the real deal. And speaking of authenticity, let's talk a little bit about advice to young women. Oh, look, we're getting Michelle Cardillo. We're getting her.
What?
Well, let's talk a little bit about advice to young women. You say in the magazine, authenticity is greater than approval.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
A lot of time we're looking for the yes. You know, you did well, or the head nod. We should be able to do things without having to look left or right for approval. We're all born with a purpose, and we have a responsibility to fulfill it, whether we get the approval or not. So, why in the world would you be born an original to die a copy? There's a graveyard, there's Mount Hope Cemetery, and it's filled with undone dreams, undone purpose. So why look at it and die there, and your ideas die there? You have everything from the time you were born down on the inside of you to fulfill everything on earth that you set your mind to. So tick tock, because it's time to do it, and it's time to do it now.
Well, there's some advice really for everybody. That's advice for young women from Crystal Ellis. That really applies across the board. Crystal's Director of Communications and Special Events for the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Rochester, one of 12 women featured in the current edition of Lake Effect magazine that you can find now. They're celebrating 25 years. I've got to take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and talk to Rosalie Jones. And you're going to hear more of these kinds of stories. If we've got time before the end of the hour, we'll try to squeeze in and ask these women about their sheroes, but that's in the magazine, too. And anything that we don't squeeze in, you've got to find in the magazine. So that's who we're talking to, the women featured in Lake Effect magazine in the current edition as they celebrate 25. Let's take that break now. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. The New York State Legislature passed a ban on religious exemptions for vaccines. But most of our local delegation did not favor the ban. They wanted to allow for religious exemptions for vaccines, and many local doctors aren't too happy about that. We're going to talk about the state of vaccines, what we know, and what the new law says, Tuesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon with a remarkable studio filled with women who are featured in the new edition of Lake Effect magazine that has been published here since 1994. And this issue, every word written by women, every photograph, every image, every idea, every concept, all women. Michelle Cardullo, the editor and publisher, telling us that she wanted to highlight these inspiring and remarkable stories of people in our community. Some of them, I suspect many of the names and faces and stories for our listeners will be new to you. And so we're highlighting just a few of them, but there's a lot more in the magazine. And one of the women featured is Rosalie Jones, who's artistic director for Daystar, contemporary dance drama of Indian America. Rosalie, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your own background and what you do with Daystar?
Okay, thank you very much. I've just been listening to the stories from the other three women here, four women really. And I am just so impressed and so honored to be in this group of women, not only who are on the program today, but in this edition, this 25th celebration edition. So I want to thank Michelle again for her amazing, really insightful, strong work with this magazine, which I've always loved. I was born on the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana. So in a sense, I'm a long way from home. I acknowledge Little Shell Chippewa as my ancestry on my mother's side. My father was Welsh, and he came from Canada. So when he decided to leave home and strike out on his own, he went across the border and found himself on the Blackfeet Reservation. This was, he came from Alberta, which is where he met my mother, went to work for her father, who had a fish camp that supplied fish to the hotels in Glacier National Park, which had been part of the Blackfeet Reservation at one time. So that's kind of where I came from. And long story short, to create the Daystar Dance Company happened in 1980. And my company is really one of probably three Native American contemporary dance companies, Native dance companies in this country, in the USA. Three is not very many. Canada has 12 or more. So I think right there it says something about the mindset here and where priorities are here in relation to Native American, Indigenous, and First Nations peoples.
Yeah, Rosalie, I'm consistently alarmed when I talk to young kids about the history of our country and, frankly, the history of Native Americans, and how many kids today will say, well, they used to live here or they lived long ago. It's this idea of not just erasure from current present American life, but an ignorance of the past, of our past, and a very caricatured look. Do you hear that too? What do you make of the idea that a lot of kids today would say, well, Indigenous peoples lived a long time ago?
Yes, it's one of the main spectacular myths of operating in the USA, and a lot of there's dozens of reasons, of course, with the influx of colonialism and the signing and pretty much consistent breaking of treaties that were signed with Indian nations. But on top of that, I feel that the education system does not teach the history of Native peoples in this on this Turtle Island where we live. That really needs to change. Some states do have a mandate to present histories at least of the Native peoples who live in their particular land base. But it should be a national history so that when you're going through grade schools, into high school, and into adulthood, it's no wonder that people think we've vanished because they haven't gotten the history throughout their educational system. And as well from families, because the families didn't get it either. So it does end up being a vicious cycle. That needs to change. And Native peoples do tend to be invisible in our contemporary society because, of course, we're not walking around with beads and feathers, so you don't know who's who, really. And thank goodness we have Ganondagan here in the immediate area. And, of course, other cultural centers around the country. But what it takes really is, I like to ask people, how many Native persons do you know personally? And usually people don't even have one person that they've met who's Native. And that would be something that could be done on a personal basis.
Breaks down many barriers. But that takes intention. That takes effort. And on behalf of schools, it takes some intention of grappling with the idea that it can be patriotic to admit your faults and to say nothing of teaching dispossession, but just how much education kids are getting at all and what they're being taught. So I didn't mean to divert on this tangent, but I just find myself unable to kind of get away from it because I hear it so consistently with kids, that misunderstanding of our own history, ignorance of...
Yes.
And so, if you don't mind, I'd like you to describe what you described in the magazine, an event that influenced, informed, or inspired you. And you joked in the magazine, it's a long story, but I think it's a great one if you can retell it with us here. While living in Wisconsin, you said you had the good fortune to perform one of your first full evening concerts. And can you tell us about what happened there?
It was an important event for me as a person, I have to say, and as an artist. And I was just starting out with Daystar Dance Company. I had done, I really started as a solo concert performer before moving into, you know, the ensemble work. So we had this booking in Wisconsin at a big theater, and there was a good audience. I was told that it would be largely for Native population, and that was true, but there were others there. And I was doing, well, a number of pieces. One on Napi, who is the Blackfoot trickster story, which accounts for many of the creation stories, and a story on Malinche from Mexico, and a piece called The Dispossessed. And The Dispossessed actually was about the issue of a young Native woman who leaves the reservations, goes to the big city, tries to get a job, ends up being homeless, experiencing violence, and goes to jail. And she has a transformation in jail by essentially remembering and connecting to her native spirit. And that in turn helps to transform her life, that she had left that when she left the land, the land of her home. That was, you know, some of the kinds of stories we were telling. Well, I was nervous because I didn't know how the audience was going to react. When I started doing workshops out on the reservation, one of the things, which sounds minor, but when I go into a school to teach, I would never wear leotards and tights because that's immodest. You would never do that. So I wore, I don't know what, sweatpants and, you know, whatever. And sometimes we were in the gymnasium and they were still throwing their balls around. And we had to clear it or we had to move chairs to get in there to do the workshop. But so I didn't know how they would react to this. So the program finishes, there's like
a smattering of applause.
So I said, okay. Packed up, went out through the front door. Everyone had left. And I was waiting for someone who was picking me up. And there was a little old Indian lady there with her coat and a bandana. And she turned and said to me, "Was that your vision?" And it just totally took me by surprise for this little old Indian lady to actually use that kind of terminology and to zero in on the whole point of why I was there. And I said, "Yes, it was." And so she thanked me and wished me, you know, good things, and we left. But I always wondered, was she a real little old Indian lady, or was she a spirit that was sent to give me courage and to go on with what I was doing, and to remind me why I was doing it?
And you still think of it today?
Oh, yes, yes.
I make no assumptions. I know you find yourself wondering how perfect it was that she could make that remark to you. But I hope it didn't require a spirit. I mean, I hope that to you it was affirming in a way that said, I should be doing this.
Oh, it was absolutely affirming. Yeah. And these are the ways that messages are given to us, mm-hmm. and sent to us unexpectedly, at a surprising moment in place. And that is, I think, reflective of how we see the world and our place in it, is that everything has spirit and we are part of the world in which we live. We're not the superior beings at the top of the pyramid. We are in the circle of life, and we are part of that circle with all of the other animals, plants, fish, birds, rocks. We're part of all of that. And our job is to connect with all of those elements in an authentic way and in a real way and in an honest way. And that's what, that's how we pray, and it's how we raise our children, and it's how we teach, and it's how we live our lives, really.
So finally, tell me about your advice for young women.
Let's see, what did I say?
You said, I'm going to read a little bit, and I'd like you to explain. You write in the magazine, believe in yourself. Look within to acknowledge your own beauty, talent, empathy, and compassion. The elders teach us that each person is given a particular gift.
Yes, yes. The gift is the important thing. Each of us has a unique gift, and I think we heard that here from all the women who are here. You can see easily what their gift is, and our responsibility is to develop that gift throughout our lives. And you're not hiding it under a bushel basket, as others would say, and you develop it, you nurture it, and you use it to help others develop their gifts.
These are the women, some of the women, 4 of the 12 featured in Lake Effect Magazine, the current edition, and you can hear why Michelle Cardula and the team at Lake Effect wanted them featured, so you can read and see these stories. So real briefly, let me just kind of go around the table, and I'll start with Jackie Vasquez. Grab that microphone. Who's your shiro?
My shiro is a woman by the name Marisol Ramos Lopez, and she actually was the administrator for the Northeast Quadrant, and most recently she was the commissioner for Parks and Recs for a while, and she just went off to start her own business. But the reason I picked her was because she was my supervisor many years ago, and she really has a gift for developing other people, and I thought that always stuck with me. If I ever thought I couldn't do anything, I mean, she just pushed me. So, and I think, like, you know, we mentioned, that's our job for each other. Women are stronger together. So as long as we can focus on developing each other and picking each other up, then I think that's huge.
Maria Fisher, your shiro.
Dr. Alice Holloway Young. She was one of the first African-American teachers in the city school district. She was one of the first African-American principals. When she moved to the 19th ward, she wasn't even allowed to look at her house because people didn't want black people moving into her neighborhood, so she had to buy it without being able to tour her home, and then would get signs and things put on her door to leave and move out. And yet she always persisted. She ended up founding the Urban Suburban Program. She became one of the founders of Monroe Community College. When students would graduate, she would shake every student's hand. She had an ice bucket at the end because she was shaking thousands of students' hands. Mm-hmm. And when buses of kids would drive by, she'd go, "There go our kids." Some people would say, "Oh, no, those are suburban kids." She said, "All our kids, all of them are. Every kid in this community is our kids." And I hope that we all think that way.
Crystal Ellis, your shiro.
I have 3. My first one is Gail Pucker. She was my high school teacher, and I love her because I went to, my high school is called Plantation High School. Wow. That's the name of my high school, Plantation High School. And it became senior year, and I ran for senior class president. It's never been done by a person of color at all. They would pour milk on my car. I got threatened by teachers to say, if you did anything wrong, we'll make sure that we expel you. It was just like a horrible experience. And while I was running, I was tempted to give up and cave in. And she says, "Don't you dare." And I ran and I won, becoming the first black senior class president at that school. So that's amazing. Second is Gloria Jean Howard, absolute powerhouse. The first CEO of Wilson Commencement Park, which is a beacon of hope in this community. She just poured life into me, and I owe her so much for just loving me. And my third shiro that I added to my list is Mrs. Michelle Cardula. I had to add her to the list for being fearless to make a magazine like this and sticking to it, and just being the voice of so many women out there. So I appreciate you. I love you. Our hearts beat together.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And Rosalie, we'll give you the mic for the last 30 seconds. Your shiro.
Of course, my mother. And she went through such a struggle as growing up on the reservation in a poverty-stricken situation because of the economic problems there, and and into her adulthood, she wanted to be an artist, but she was never able to do that. So I have to say, yes, I have a certain privilege also that my parents gave me the best of education, the best of what they didn't get in their young lives. So I feel that's the reason I've kept with my professional work for so long, and that it's not only the performance, it's also the teaching of young people.
Well, we've hit the wall on time, but you got to read all the stories. And we've got 4 of the women represented in the magazine out of 12. Imagine what the stories we didn't get to today. Michelle Cardula, thank you for introducing the community, those who did know, to all of these women. And thank you all for
thank
being
you,
here.
Evan, for thank having
you.
Us on.
Thanks, Bob, Rob, Megan. I'm Evan. I hope you're inspired. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.